Welcome to We Watch Too Much TV, the weekly podcast where two real-life best friends dish on all the TV content they've been binging in their remote work-based lives. Babbling about everything from scripted television to reality TV and film, these two besties will immerse you in their quirky universe of streaming. Here are your hosts, Jocelyn and Tanea.
Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. You don't need no much words in that song. Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. Burn, 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 burn. Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. Burn, 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 burn. Come on, James Brown.
Happy Black History Month. Welcome to We Watch Too Much TV, Season 6, Episode 11. Mm-hmm. We are your hosts. I'm Jocelyn Jovan.
And I am Tanea. I don't have a middle name that is going to go with this. So just Tanea.
Tanea says, Doc. Yes. And we are real life best friends. Y'all know y'all been sticking with us. If you're new here, welcome. And we typically are only doing our voices. We just do it as an audio podcast, but periodically.
I have a good voice. I'm like, I need to get into voiceover work. I want to be in a commercial.
You do have a good voice.
Come on, Depends. Come on, Tampons.
Get on camera and show you that we're real life people and we're pretty.
Yes, very pretty. No ugliness.
Yes, I hope everyone is doing well, staying warm.
And celebrating Black folks.
I mean, every day, all the time. Because, you know, I was thinking today, I was like, do like other people like take a mindful approach of like when it's like, oh, what do they think when it's Black History Month? Do they think like, oh, I want to support something Black?
Corporations
all
do.
These channels, they'll pull out their archives of like, oh, here's our Black content. And I'm like, are we the only ones watching it?
Yep, corporations do. My job Friday is like, and this is all the stuff we're doing for Black Christmas, which I enjoy celebrating it because there's some companies and people who are ignoring it. But in a big corporate world, they love their DEI or diversity. Yeah. They're like, Black DJ, Black programming, just in case for our Black people.
I mean, hey.
We love you.
Everyone deserves to be celebrated. 100%. And with it being Black History Month, we have a question. What's a Black history fact that you learned too late in life?
Mine is annoying because I literally found this out today on Instagram. The pioneer engineer who created the technology we use for Zoom, for FaceTime, for Microsoft Teams, is a Black doctor, Dr. Marion Crook. She was just initiated into the National Inventors Hall of Fame. Nobody talks about her. She's been so impactful. She's only one of two Black female tech inventors. If it wasn't for her, we would not have FaceTime. If it wasn't for her, we would not have Zoom. If it wasn't for her being at AT&T for 30 years, we wouldn't have this. So shout out to you, Dr. Crook, because why am I just finding this out in 2026?
That is very true, right? You know, because you see some people like they want you to know, like, oh, yes. Tesla, SpaceX.
We use Zoom every day. Everybody uses FaceTime and Zoom every day.
We use FaceTime every day.
And a Black woman created that.
I love it. Listen, mine is also going to a Black woman. I learned this in like 2017, 2016, which was like, yeah, kind of late to learn about Henrietta Lacks. She had cervical cancer in 1951, and her cancer cells are the source of the HeLa cell line, which continues to be a source of invaluable medical data to this day. They use her cells with a lot of like regenerative projects that they've done, cures or just ways of like helping to treat diseases, all from this Black woman's cancer cells. It's saved lives.
We always saving lives. We always are.
So yeah, shout out to Henrietta Lacks. Shout out to
Dr. Crook, Marion
Crook. Okay, Black women, we out here. Say it loud.
I'm Black and I'm proud.
But yes, you already know why we're here. We're here to dig into what we have been watching on television for the last week since you spoke to us last. So on that note, let's get into our weekly grab. Best friend, what's first on your list?
The return of like the newest best medical drama outside of Grey's Anatomy, and that is The Pitt.
Okay.
Noah Wiley is another one of our good white men. You know, I have a list of good white men who you'll never see in any drama. Noah Wiley, Seth Meyers, just like they've never been Me Too. They've never been racist. They were raised as a good white man. Noah Wiley. So
shout out to the good whites.
Hello.
Okay. As we are in Black History Month, you already know. We wouldn't have made it as far as we made it in this world.
We needed some allies. Okay? So.
We need more good whites in this world. We all do. Not just Black people. The
America.
World as an entity needs more good whites.
Thank you, Jesus.
It's not racist.
No, it is not racist. It's a real fact. So Noah Wiley, of course, he spearheads the team. I just saw one of the new actresses who plays one of the interns do an interview about him. She's like, when you're number one on the TV call sheet, usually the actors, they put stand-ins when they do read-throughs with scripts. She said the first time she was auditioning the callback, she was with him. And she was like, he really tries to set the precedent on a set about how to treat people. He's very human. And that he had all of them go through boot camp before season one and season two, how to put on gloves right, how to set a reminder. Because, you know, nurses and doctors are literally every second on hand sanitizers. He was very adamant about the layout of the hospital. But anyway, season two is back. Like I said, the thing about The Pitt as compared to other medical shows is every episode is 1 hour. The whole season is just one day. So they take you from the start of the day to the end of the day. Where we last left off, he had a little mental breakdown, if you will, about just some unresolved medical issues that some of his friends were going through, some loss he went through. So he's decided to go on sabbatical. So they start the season with him getting prepared to leave and his replacement coming, a young new doctor who's very into AI. Her thing is you don't need to type your notes, record them on AI. So you kind of see the battle of like he's leaving and he wants to like let her leave, but he doesn't like how she's leading. She doesn't like how he calls it The Pit. She wants him to have more like respect for the room. And he's like, but it's The Pit. This is what we do. You just see new interns kind of competing against each other. What I love is that the stories are so real. There's this one couple where the guy literally is having a mood swing every time the nurse goes check on him. First, he's angry. Then he's sad. Then he's upset. Then he's abusive. Something in her gut tells her to do an x-ray. He ends up having a really big tumor in his frontal earlobe. His wife divorced him, but he never changed his emergency contact. So the wife came, and she was just like, he sucked as a husband. And then the nurse was like, well, honestly, a lot of that was due to his health. And so he starts being nice to the ex-wife. She got remarried, but you see the remorse because she asked the nurse, like, do you think this would have made him the person he was towards the end of our marriage? And she's like, probably. So you just see her navigate this emotional change of like getting her husband back, but them navigating like what they're going to do with his tumor and his brain. You also see a little girl who has, it's a very hard word, but basically she bruises easily. And the nurse is assuming that she's being abused by the mom, the dad, or the dad's girlfriend. They end up doing their research and they find out like you could just do that and she just bruises really easily. She has a very rare disease. So you see them navigating those hard conversations because when you get a kid and you think they're abused, you can't just say you're abused, but you can't assume either. So it was interesting to me watching how you navigate those hard conversations. And the last storyline that I want to highlight is one of the doctors actually got caught by an intern for stealing pills. And he comes back from rehab. He apologizes to the patient. The patient is like a known alcoholic in The Pit. He comes like once a week. He's a nice Black guy named Louis. Everybody knows him. So the Noah Wiley puts him on like scut. Like they don't trust him yet. So they give him like the regular ER people. He goes to the patient and he's like, I'm really sorry. I stole some of your pills. Please forgive me. Like I need to make amends. It's a part of my journey and my healing. And so you see the doctor try to like tell people like, I'm better. I've changed my ways. But you see Dr. Rabiu or Noah Wiley like, I don't really trust you yet. So I can't wait to keep watching. It's the best show, like medical show ever. He deserves all of the awards. The Pitt. That's what I'm watching. What's first on
Always
yours?
trust Taneya to
I
put
love a
down
medical
a
show.
medical drama, which that being only two, Grey's Anatomy and The Pitt, and a
Yep.
documentary.
Yes.
And a sick documentary at that, the dark
Because
ones.
people be sick.
Not the fun ones for the most part. It is always dark. Okay, so first on my weekly grab is one of those limited series, you know, the limited drama series. We love those. So this one is His and Hers on Netflix. I saw it pop up and I actually was having a drink a couple of weeks ago before I went to New York and I met a bartender. My bartender is in one of the episodes. So he told me about the show and so then, you know, cognitive filtering, once it popped up on my Netflix and I see Tessa Thompson and she can do no wrong, I'm like, let me check this out because I know with Tessa Thompson, like if she's in it, it's good. So it's super captivating mystery thriller around the murder of a woman named Rachel and a whodunit in the small town of DeLongia. DeLongia.
Sounds like Narnia.
Reporter Anne Andrews, Tessa Thompson, returns to DeLongia to uncover the to cover the murder case in hopes of getting her anchor job back after a year off following the death of her child. So she kind of, you know, was in depressive state, kind of took a sabbatical, and so this other girl, I'll call her Roxy Andrews because I forgot her name. She comes, but I think it is Roxy. It's something like Roxy. She gets the job. So now Tessa comes back. She's not the head anchor anymore, but she's still hungry. And I can relate to that, you know, like after having a baby. Now, granted, not having a baby and then losing it, but having a baby and then still just having that drive, and kind of feeling like you need to prove yourself. Cause, you know, people do treat it, especially in media entertainment, they'll treat you differently after you have a kid. And so she's like, I can do this. I can go back to my hometown and cover this murder. I know the people. So now you see her go back to the town, and the lead detective on the case, Jack, is actually her estranged husband. You don't even really get to that until like towards the end of episode one, because it's like, what is their dynamic? Why is he so like? Because it's like you see him come and bang on her hotel door. It's like, who is I, you? Just a detective. But it turns out they were married. They are married. They haven't even gotten divorced. It's just that they've been estranged. But so estranged that he's clearly sleeping with someone else. I won't get too much into that because I don't want to give it away.
Because I will watch it. It's on my list
He's
too.
sleeping with someone else. I don't want to get too much into that because you got to see who she's sleeping with and how they connect. But there's a lot of moments that make you wonder if Jack, this detective, is the killer. I won't say why. You got to watch. And again, I'm only up to episode three. I believe it's like seven episodes. So I'm only up to episode three and I've gotten this much information from the story. So it is one that you got to pay attention to. It's not the passive watch. You do got to pay attention, but it's a very intriguing story. And there's also suspicion around Rachel's husband. So remember, Rachel is the one that's dead. And you see, that's how the show starts, is her lying dead on top of a car outside in the woods and it's raining. So it's like, okay, what happened? And they cut to Tessa Thompson entering her apartment disheveled and covered in like rain and stuff. So it's like, huh. So then you're also like, did she do it? That's why it's like this whole whodunit. Then come to find out, Rachel, who got murdered, and Anne Andrews, Tessa Thompson, they were in this friendship clique in high school. And you'll see throwbacks of them in high school, but Anne Andrews, Tessa Thompson, clearly did something that they wasn't rocking with her. Like she was like hated because one of the other friends, she goes to like meet up with her and she is shading the F out of her. And so like I said, I'm only up to episode three, so I still don't know what she did. But that's also a probably a big crucial piece of this story. Even during the parts where it's straight dialogue, you know, like I was saying, you have to pay attention because there's clues everywhere. And I like it. You know, we love a
Yes.
good.
Who done it?
That's why they're always like limited, because it's like, you know what, we're gonna tell this story, we're gonna get a good cast, we're gonna get good actors that can deliver, tell this story, and then that's it. But it's good. So check out His and Hers on Netflix.
It is on my list because while nobody gave spoilers, everybody keeps saying the end is like
Ooh,
a big
wait.
Twist. So I don't know what it is, yeah. But everybody keeps saying
Ooh,
the end
wait.
is not what you expect.
I can tell. I'm telling you, just from like these episodes I've watched, I'm like, okay.
I'm gonna try to watch it and catch up.
But it's going.
Yeah.
And so once when I have the baby settled and stuff, that I'll turn that on and I'll just kind of like watch an episode. And then, you know, that's why I got to take my time to get through it, but it's a good one. So yeah, check it out.
Adding it.
What's next on your weekly grab?
Ooh, next on my weekly grab is Ryan Murphy redeeming himself for the horror that is all fair. I don't care what nobody says. That show sucks.
Okay. Tell me about it.
The Beauty on FX/Hulu, starring Ashton Kutcher, our guy Jeremy Pope, who I love Jeremy
Oh,
Pope.
We love him.
Oh, he's
Hollywood.
Such a good actor. And
He's
Anthony
gorgeous.
Ramos is in it, Mr. Hamilton. And then also, Evan Peters is playing a good guy. He's usually Jeffrey Dahmer or Creepy or like the ex-husband in Pope. Like,
he
or
probably
like the
told
secret.
Ryan, like, please don't make me the evil guy.
Yes, he's finally the good guy, and he plays it so well. And I'm like, I'm tired of not rooting for him, but I'm rooting for him.
Right, right.
So basically, he's in the FBI. He works on like the crimes unit. He has a partner who's an Interpol, which is like the European version of the FBI. They're having like a friends with benefits secret relationship. All of a sudden, there's this big model who is played by Bella Hadid in the series. She makes her Paris Fashion Week debut, walks down the runway, and then starts freaking the hell out. She gets hot, she steals somebody's water, and she just starts killing motherfuckers, like killing everybody and running through the street. And for a good 5-10 minutes, whoever she sees, she's killing, but she's dying of thirst. The cops come to arrest her, and she combusts. She busts open. So then that happens, and then it's the third case. So Evan is trying to figure out only these models who all used to be fat and overweight, no family, no friends. They become models, and within 2 to 3 weeks of their weight loss, they all die. And they all die the same way. They overheat, they combust. And when the authorities look at them, their body heat is like 180, 90 degrees. So then they learn that it's sexually transmitted. So it's like a STD that makes you skinny and it makes you beautiful and then you die. So it starts of like, they don't know that yet. And then the woman that Evan Peters is working with, she ends up dying. She meets a guy, she hooks up with him, but he can't find her. So he doesn't know it yet. So basically this disease started in Europe. It comes to New York. A model worked at overseas for Vogue. She comes to the office and she combusts. So the whole show is figuring out what it is. But on the opposite, you see that Ashton Kutcher is this rich billionaire type, money everywhere. He created it. He created this like youth program. And his number one, his first client was Anthony Ramos, who is 65. In the show, but looks our age.
Like beautiful.
He looks our age. He looks beautiful, young. And then Jeremy Pope plays like a young, kind of secluded, overweight guy in the beginning. He goes into these dark chat rooms to find women to hook up with. Someone's like, I know what you need. Come visit me. He finds a doctor. The doctor's like, I can help you be desirable. He takes the shot or the stuff, if you will. He goes from like the bigger, less attractive guy to what we know as Jeremy Pope, but he's immune. He's the first person to be exposed that doesn't die, but also is a natural born killer. So basically, Anthony Ramos hires Jeremy Pope to be like his ace boon coon. And Ashton Kutcher pays all of them to basically kill anybody who tries to take this strain or this beauty thing, if you will. So you have Evan Peters trying to figure out what this is, why people are dying, and you have Anthony Ramos and Jeremy Pope killing people who either don't pay their money or try to make like an off-brand of it. It's just a really good kind of suspense whodunit. It is kind of graphic. So
I mean, but did you just told us who done it?
Not really, because we're still figuring out what it is exactly.
Oh, okay.
So we know
the show's still airing, right?
Right. So it's only up to episode, I think, 4. It's like the 5th one. It comes out every week. So the only thing we know is that Ashton Kutcher has created something. We know that Anthony Ramos and Jeremy Pope are now going to work together to kind of get it to where it needs to be. But Evan Peters is still trying to figure out where it is, who creates it, and how it happens. Because it's you take a pill or you have unprotected sex with somebody, then you get really young and really pretty. And then you combust. Like, you overheat, you get, like, crazy, you try to fight everybody, you drink toilet water, that's how, like, dehydrated you are, and then you bust open. So, like, a lot of this is, like, blood and gore. So
now that you're watching it, how do you feel about the criticisms of, like, you know, comparing it to The Substance and then him hiring Ashton Kutcher? Do you think it's an original story, or is it a lot of similarities between The Substance with
what is The Substance? Sorry,
Demi Moore. I told you
I didn't see that, but that's the one that you watched. Okay,
so that's probably see. So now I'm still skeptical. Then I'm sorry,
okay.
I need to hear a take from someone who watched The Substance and then watched Beauty and then can say, no, this is great, this is an original story. Because the one thing I think with Ryan, I'm a fan of Ryan Murphy from American Horror Story. But I also often think, like, when it comes, like, with All's Fair, like, where something where he's, it's like, he's trying to kind of be original, it's not good. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is, you know, drawing inspiration from stuff that already popped off for someone else. So first of all, Bessie, you need to watch The Substance.
No, it'll make me watch it to Amazing. Compare and contrast, because I don't have anything to compare it to. I
yeah,
do.
It sounds like he took that inspiration from that concept, but then kind of just twisted it and made it like, oh, well, they have to have sex and then everyone dies. But is it original? So I would want to, you know, because I don't want to watch it unless I know that it's like.
And then with Ashton Kutcher, he's a very believable, like.
I do love Anthony Ramos.
Rich, he's so good in it. Him and Jeremy Pope and Evan Peters. Like,
I like
Ashton Kutcher
brought them under his umbrella. Because
yes.
Anthony Ramos, well, one, we already know Jeremy Pope. He's crushing it.
The
but
best.
Anthony Ramos has still been, like, so under the radar. And I've been wanting him to, like.
Get he's a bad face. Guy. He's a good bad guy. And I'm kind of rooting
he's
for them, but not
Brooklyn.
Really. Yes. Best Barrow. But I. Ashton Kutcher is not the main point. He is like the main guy, but most of it is him sending Anthony Ramos and now Jeremy Pope to do the work and Evan Peters trying to find out the head so he can cut it out. But I will try to watch The Substance to compare and contrast. But to me, I just like the, it's kind of like His and Hers where like, I thought it was one thing and I was like, oh no. So you could, somebody could like, the girl died and all her guts got on the guy in his eye and then he got it.
Okay. I see. Okay. So it sounds like he turned it into something else, but it's still just with the whole concept of youth and beauty.
Yes.
That's similar to The Substance, but
with
The Substance, it's more of like, this is their choice that they are doing. They're doing this drug to obtain this beauty. But it sounds like with Beauty, what, because if you said it's somebody, so I can have sex with someone unknowingly and contract the beauty disease and then
right.
Die.
So it's like half of it is some people are intentionally doing it and some people don't know.
Right.
So
right,
the
right.
detective, she just met a really attractive guy, went home with him, and then died.
Yeah,
but Jeremy Pope purposely, but and they're also still trying to figure out what is it about him. Because he was the only one that didn't die,
right.
that hasn't combust. And there's a scene where, like, Anthony Ramos is watching him be intimate with a woman and giving him tips and pointers. Because he was a virgin. He never dated. He was just a Sikh before this drug, if you will. And so you see them trying to navigate that. But I will compare it to The Substance. But I do like it. And it's redemption from All's Fair. So
okay, yeah, good. Because
the beauty,
yeah,
yes, because that all
the last couple of seasons of American Horror Story haven't really been good, and it is rooted in like, just please, everyone, stop trying to force Kim Kardashian on us. Like
please.
We know that she is it. I like Kim Kardashian. I like Kim Kardashian because she is true to herself. And like, everyone knows I'm obsessed with myself and I want to be famous and I just love attention. I love that about her, that she just owns it. But that don't mean she got to be put in everything because she's not talented. Kim Kardashian
is the
talent.
Worst actor
it's
I've ever
just finding
seen.
Ways to remain relevant. But she has no actual talent and is definitely not on screen as an actress. So to me, I feel like Ryan Murphy, you know, they got a relationship and it's like, you trying to force her on it's not good. Like that season of American Horror Story was horrible. It's honestly, to me, as a fan, the worst one. And that All's Fair, I didn't hear, only good review I heard was from Brittany. Since you gotta watch All's Fair, I was like, Brittany, no, I'm not.
No. And then you know what it is? She plays herself. It's not even because she's Kim Kardashian, it's because she's a bad actor.
Yes, it's like, stop. And so now I just heard they're putting her in some like Friends flick that's going to Netflix.
Wait, like Selena, is it Selena Gomez or something? Like she's, I'm like, wow.
It's like a little, it's a Brenda Song.
Oh, yeah, no.
Kim Kardashian, some other, it's like an Asian. A white girl, a curvy white girl, and then Kim Kardashian, who it just is like, she doesn't even look like she belongs in this group. The three of the others look fine together, but Kim, it's like, just stop. Just
you think she pays for it? You think she pays?
Yeah, or I think, well, it's not even that she pays for it, because you know, you have friends that are like actresses and actors, and they'll tell you how they get passed up on roles for influencers. Like people that aren't even really trying to act. They're just an influencer. And now they're like, oh, I want to go audition. And they get the role because they have a following and they'll bring more attention to the, and Kim does do that. Granted, I think probably a lot of people checked out All's Fair out of curiosity because of her being in it. So I think that's what they do it for, but it's really just cheapening the concept of creating a good show, a good movie or whatever.
I just want her to stick to Skims because she's not a good actress.
And just stick to her reality show. Stick to the red carpet, stick to just all of that. But like just certain things don't, you know,
stop
trying to pass the bar exam. Just, you know.
That's a whole nother conversation because girl, you didn't even go to school. You just studied for 2 months. It's the bar exam.
I don't even think she finished high school.
I think she just took the test. How do you go from a GED or high school diploma to the bar exam?
Because when you grow up just having everything done how you want it done because you have money, you think that you can make everything happen because you have money, but there's certain things that can't.
That's like me saying, I love the Pit. I'm going to go take my medical test to be a registered nurse. But yes, love the beauty. I will watch the Substance because now I'm interested to see the
I might stuff. Check it out only because I love the cast that you just mentioned. And it sounds like it's an interesting concept. So, and I will give Ryan Murphy another chance because Kim Kardashian is not in it. So
please don't do a cameo. Yes. What's that?
Oh God, no. Even though I would say this sounds like this is up the storyline, you know, the concept of beauty. You know, like her family, but yeah, no, they can't act, no. next on my list, you already know, Tanea put me on that the new season of Next Level Chef was starting season 5. I was actually going on Hulu last night to just watch an episode of Will Trent or High Potential, and Next Level Chef popped up. I was like, oh, I'm watching this right now, okay, 10 p.m., So just from the highlights of what's to come this season, I already got anxiety from whoever's plate fell off the platform. I said, like,
this is why I love that show.
They were putting it up but he clearly was late. And so the plate just fell backwards. I was like, there's no redeeming that. Like we've seen plates kind of fall and things, but no, when the so we'll see when that, because
you're automatically in the bottom. They have nothing to taste.
There's nothing. I was like, oh my gosh, you gave me anxiety. but okay. So it's, you know, it's auditions. Only 15 are going to make it. They're going to dwindle it down to 5 pro chefs, 5 home chefs and social media chefs. But episode 1 is just the pro chefs auditioning, going through each layer. They start at the bottom kitchen, end at the top kitchen. I will say all of the personal pro chefs, they are so personable. Every time they gave each one their introduction, I liked each one. So I was rooted for them. So then when, you know, I think 2-3 people ended up, you know, getting eliminated, I was like, oh, I thought you were going to make it. I was rooting for you.
You see the story, you're like, oh, they're going to get through it. They're like, no,
they didn't get through it, but they at least gave everyone an intro. Mm-hmm. Gabrielle, you go and see it. She ends up making it, but she got tore up each grab. I was like, can sis not the first grab? She cut her ear, bleeding down her ear. Second grab in the middle kitchen, she bust her ass. I'm like, by the time they got to the top, bro, I was like, Gabrielle, protect Gabrielle.
Medic, yes. Medic.
Because she was just getting tore up, child. But yeah, so far from the pro chefs, there's like two standouts. The Jamaican, always the Caribbeans, they crush the damn. Caribbeans crush cooking competitions because they cook
all the time.
And then there's a guy from Orange County, California, that he grew up in like LA and just beaches and all of that, but he knew he wanted something different. He was really passionate about cooking, and so he moved to New Orleans. And so this white boy is mixing New Orleans with like California cuisine. He is, you see, with each challenge, he is just crushing it. Those two right there, to me, are the two standouts among the pro chefs. I look forward to seeing what the social media chefs and the home chefs got, because so far those pro chefs is coming with it. But yeah, and Chef Blaze, probably listen to our episode last season when I talked about his hair. It was just a bit much. The poof was just doing too much. So he lowered the poof.
Okay.
And I'm sure when he looked back at the season, he was like, whoa, why does my poof? So he fixed it.
Thank you, Chef Blaze.
Chef Blaze is coming back with a vengeance because he won. And so now he's like, he's trying to win again. Chef Arrington, she's like feeling a kind of way because she's like, nah, I gotta win. And just Gordon Ramsay's being Gordon.
It's Gordon Ramsay. I love him. This is the show where I don't really care who wins. Usually, I'm very like, I want this. Either of them win. I knew they had to give Chef Blaze one because it was for
he
him to win.
The one yet, but he did have Chef a good Nisha. Team. I don't even think it was handed to him. That was a deserved win last season. He picked good. So, but it's also funny too because you can see when each level, each chef is with the group. So when it's Chef Arrington, she's already letting it be known. You better do good. We looking at who we want on our team. She's and then you can tell when she already picks a favorite and she's kind of, because Gordon and Chef Blaze is watching. She's already kind of letting them know, like, I want this one on my team. So you better not. She's like coming ready. We love Next Level Chef. So it's out. Check it out. Just one episode so far, unfortunately. That's one I would binge. What's last on your weekly grab?
Last on mine, I think I'm one of the few people my age who still watch Saturday Night Live religiously. I usually watch it on Peacock because it's very hard for me to watch this Saturday at 11:30. This episode in particular was really funny, one, because Alexander Skarsgård was the host. And I've met him from like White Lotus, other like serious roles. So to see him be funny, I really like actually genuinely laughed. Two of my favorite sketches was one... first of all, side note, Saturday Night Live, you got rid of Bowen Yang. I better get a black woman this season. With Ego, Woldem leaving, they only have two black guys, Keenan, and damn, I do not know this other black guy's name.
Oh,
Cam.
I know. Cam Patterson.
Yes, Cam Patterson.
From Kill Tony.
Yes, Cam Patterson.
I love Cam Patterson on Kill
he's
Tony.
Very funny.
Everything I've seen him on SNL, though, I'm like, I don't know. But I don't know. I don't watch SNL, so I might not have seen like his best stuff.
It takes time. He did a recent skit where he played Michael Irvin, the really loud
that
old
one
cowboy
I saw
player.
On Twitter, he was
that funny. One was funny. Okay. So I think he's gonna find his footing.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, you gotta find your rhythm.
Right, but they don't have any women of color. So I hope that over this next year we get some. We miss an Ego, but they do have Marcelo, and he always does some type of Latin thing. He did a skit where it's with all immigration dads. So Alexander Skarsgård played a Finland dad, and apparently on Twitter there was like, no, if you know like Swedish men, that's how they are. They're not emotional. They don't show love. And his dad, Stella Skarsgård. So I don't
the
know.
Way Who I've like know other than Bill Skarsgård, who plays Pennywise. It's like they're also famous, but I don't really know to identify them because they're. So I didn't realize that the dad, Stellan Skarsgård, was the one who got thrown through the glass in Deep Blue Sea when the shark went to its threw his at.
He's a Shakespearean actor.
Yeah, the whole family. I did watch a little YouTube on them because I was like, what is the Skarsgård?
Good. Yes. So he was in the immigration skit, and Cardi B made an appearance because she was a musical guest. She played Marcela Hernandez's wife. And then they was like, no, she played a real Dominican old
Oh,
mom.
she did.
It
And
was.
you know what? Shout out to Cardi B. She really did. It was very intentional for her to choose to perform Bodega Baddie and wear the. And it's so funny because, you know, you see idiots on the internet and they're like, oh, but isn't she Dominican? Why is she wearing a Mexican dress? I'm like, oh.
Your dummies, it is the Dominican
I'm
flag.
like, you know what? It's different because it's like we went to high school in Harlem with mad Dominicans, and there was always, remember, there was that day when the girls would all come in with that dress that Cardi B had on with those little skip sneakers that they would wear. And I was like, what is it? It wasn't even like, it was like some type of like Dominican Pride Day. But
Yes.
so it's like we know because we grew up in a cultured city, but a lot of people that don't know are just like, what? Shut up.
She
So
was very intentional, everything from the two dark-skinned dancers next to her to the two Dominican band that played behind her.
Crushing it.
And then all the jokes that, like, they told on Saturday night. I mean, we can update just about Melania's movie and how it sucks. Somebody said they called it Wicked for real. Like, it's the real Wicked because it's like it's crazy. But it just was funny. It was a light watch. So, Saturday Night Live, I
Yes.
still watch you.
Yeah, it's always good when they have a good episode.
Yes.
Last
What's
time
left
we
on your
grab
list?
is Drag Race. Season, what are we up to? 17?
18.
18?
It's legal. It can go to the club.
Wow, you go to the 18 to par 18 to party, 21 to drink club. Okay, I gotta
Haven't watched it yet. I'm watching it after this too. That and Next Level Chef. But go ahead. I know it's the talent show and I know it's the Raider Queen.
it's right part one of the talent show. They're gonna break it up in
Yes.
2 weeks. So Kenya Pleaser, mama, I just gave you
You
my
just
guess last
were bigging her up.
No, I still love her because it's the personality down. But again, once again, the fashion, it's like, and this time it was not, it's not a sewing challenge. Remember, it's a talent show, and this was what they already knew what they were going to have to
So
wear,
she bought this outfit to
which is,
wear.
what is it? Something about satin, like, don't call me satin, like playing off the word, you know, Satan. But she said her designer didn't finish her dress in time. And so she just threw something together from a coat that from one of the other girls. She looks, this one is the worst look that she's put on the runway. It is so bad. Luckily for her, because it's broken up into 2 weeks, they only rated the looks of those who were performing on the talent show this week. And she doesn't perform this week. She performs next week. But I know what they're gonna say about that dress. It's bad. And at this point, it's like I
Really?
there's no, you know, your personality isn't gonna get you all the way through the competition. And she knows. That's what I like about it. I know that she's gonna go out with a good spirit, but it's just clear that you're gonna go out.
Is it La La Ree bags bad?
Oh no. No.
That is the level of bad
La
I
La Ree,
go.
baby. You already know that takes
She's
the
going down in history.
like literally the word. And it was, I never forget how she walked too. Like, all right, I gotta serve this thing. But
I got it.
yes. Also, Juicy ate the talent show,
Of course.
which is like, you know, we already knew, right?
Of
You know, we
course.
already knew that because she hasn't been like so strong in the challenges, but this talent show. And then you got Mia Star, Tanea. So Mia Star, remember, Mia Star is the one that was a professional dancer and
Done
put.
this before.
So
Yeah,
then now, so it's like
choreographer.
you're like waiting for her like to come out because it's like, all right, she's this dancer. Her dancing, first of all, I love it, but it is very Taya Brown, Brooklyn.
She's about that life. What's the problem?
Like literally, well, she had her titties bouncing. And so I don't want to spoil it for you because whatever, but that lip sync, because it's not the bottom two, it's the top two.
Top
So
two.
that lip sync with the two, iconic. One of the hands down best, you know, we live for those. One
Yes,
of
I
the
love
best
a good lip sync.
hands down best lip syncs. It almost brought tears to my eyes at the end because I was just like, they ate that so good. And then Zara Larsson.
Yes.
So they sang her song and she was the judge and she's amazing. I love the ones who you could tell are fans of the show and Rue and everything. Also, Nini Coco's talent was unique and cunt. Really did like it.
Okay.
Very different, but
Got it. It
it
wasn't
worked.
Irene, the alien just pouring water.
No, you'll see. Like
Okay.
it's different and it's like
Okay. It's good, different.
It's good different. She might even set a new tone for the future. Because, you know, not every girl is a dancer queen. Not every girl. So it's like, don't go to get up there and be Irene the alien. Get up there and be Nini Coco. Okay. Vita Von Teese. This is why. Because remember, you asked me last week who were my standouts. And I said only Kenya Pleaser and who's my other one? Jane Don't. Vita Von Teese. Granted, you could serve a look. But every challenge you have shown that when it, you cannot... You have nothing outside of a runway look that someone probably made for you. Or I don't take that you can sew. She can sew, but that's it. So her talent, the worst. Like the worst. It was like, what are you doing?
I'm going to watch that before next level.
You have like no talent outside of turning the look. So to me, I don't see Vita Von Teese going far in the competition.
Vita Von Teese star, because that is a copyright infringement. So don't forget the star at the last. Because remember, it is a real Vita Von Teese. She's Vita Von Teese star.
Lord,
that's why, because she's like, Vita Montes.
Why would she do that? Oh, no. So even that, you just pissed me off.
You have to say the star.
That is so dumb. Change your name. You're not even doing nothing where it's like, I am Vita Montes.
Yeah. You have to
come out with a more original name. You need more actual talent. So again, keep serving the looks, because her runway looks are always top, but that's where it ends. So yeah. All right, guys, don't forget to like and subscribe, rate and review, follow us on social media at We Watch Too Much TV. That's TEA with the letter V. And it's really great because we do interviews on this show. It's just, it hasn't happened in a long time. We've only done one interview.
You know,
we've done one interview, and shout out to our girl that was on
Project Runway.
We had her, but now it's Tanae's alley, because we have a documentary. The documentary on Netflix, so Secret good. Mall Apartment. It came out in 2024, but it had a commercial release last year, and so now everybody's talking about it. And we have the pleasure of chatting it up with the creative and mastermind of the doc, Michael Townsend.
Mm-hmm. Such a nice guy, such a good documentary, so inspiring. Yes. Just a good white. Shout out to a good white.
So let's get into it. All right. So we're back here on We Watch Too Much TV. And join us in welcoming the artist and the mastermind behind the newest. Well, it's not so new because I saw it came out, but it's the talk about it has just reemerged.
Yes.
And it's behind the Netflix documentary Secret Mall Apartment. Michael Townsend. You will see him all through it, because it was your brainchild.
Yes, I'm at the heart of the circumstances.
Yes. Sure. So how does it feel to finally share this story with the world officially?
Yeah, so it's been a wild ride, especially in the last 9 days. This movie hung out in the top 10 of Netflix's like top 10 of the U.S.,
yeah.
It has no business being in the top 10, but here we are. I think officially just today to mark it, it did finally slide out of the top 10, but
okay.
we had a 9 day run in there.
Awesome.
And so the thing that's the most exciting for me personally, so my life is sort of split evenly in half between doing big art projects that run the gamut from like esoteric stuff, just like public art, but the other half is art education. So I'm deeply interested in how people perceive art or want to participate in it or think about it. And this movie as an art education victory, wow. Like just, it's so heartening to know that somewhere in the millions of people have invited this movie into their homes and have been given the opportunity to see a buffet of art ideas to think about. And I can't get to everybody. The movie's doing the heavy lifting. I hope it's had a positive impact. so that part I'm super thrilled about.
I just want to say it was amazing. I was very inspired. I do a lot of work with young kids with my sorority, and that tape art thing is something I'm going to try to bring in our April cohort. So just thank you for that, sharing your desire. Give me a little bit more insight about the creation of it, working with the director, Jeremy. How did this whole idea come from? This, because we're from New York. We don't know anything about Rhode Island, let alone living in an apartment. Okay. Okay, so give us a little background into like how this became a Netflix documentary.
Fair enough. So this is the movie regales some tales from the 2000s. So the story is, in essence, an older story. This became international news in 2007 when I was arrested for trespassing because we had lived off and on in a secret apartment in the mall for 4 years. So upon getting caught, the narrative, the idea of it was strong enough that it captured the imaginations of people all over the world. And so we were getting calls from, my goodness gracious, like Hong Kong and Johannesburg and like Berlin. And people were just like, what is this? Those phone calls pretty much shed light on the fact that the story didn't need to be a movie. Like, as a narrative, it was doing just fine on its own. And we made the decision at that time, 2007, to turn down all movie offers. We're like, no movie. And this is not from lack of being asked. Like, we are getting bombarded with requests, movie deals, book deals, TV deals. And the team of eight artists were like, we're not doing it. Because as a piece of artwork, as a story, it is accomplishing its goal. And why would we mess that up with our faces? Like, why would we get people involved in sort of like our philosophies or politics or any more than tiny interviews at the time we're doing? So we said no. And then for the next 16 plus years, on a yearly basis, I'm getting several calls from directors who want to turn it into a movie. And as time goes on, their ideas get dumber and dumber. The further you get away from the actual event, the more it looks like a prank in the rearview mirror. Like, this is a silly thing that happened. But if you've seen the movie, you can see that it was a very complex web of emotional things that were transpiring at the same time. So we ran into Jeremy Workman. Jeremy Workman's the guy who makes this movie. Ran into him a couple years ago. By accident, I was in Athens, Greece, doing tape art. That means drawing with tape on buildings. This particular building was made out of glass, and inside that building was the world's best domino toppler. Her name is Lily. If you go on YouTube and look up Lily Dominoes, you're going to see this amazing, like, mind-blowing work. One of the few people I can recognize from YouTube by face. I'm like, that is a YouTube megastar in there. And who is that person with the camera following her around? That was Jeremy Workman. He was working on the documentary Lily Topples the World. And so I met Jeremy as a filmmaker. He was like in his work environment. So I got to watch him with the subject. I got to watch how he treated her and how he sort of approached filmmaking. So that sort of convinced me that he was a good filmmaker. And then I had seen some of his films. I actually was familiar. He's got a little body of work primarily focused on artists. So he makes films about artists or about sort of obsessive weirdos, maybe. So he likes to make them accessible. They're kind films, they're thoughtful films. And we're like, you know what? This story's been out there for a long time. And we got a guy here who's good at making films, has an approach that I really dig. Maybe this is the time to do it. And when he finished Lily Topples the World, he gave us a call. We had stayed in contact, and he said, "Any chance we can do this? Is your heart open to the idea of finally releasing this footage to somebody?" And yeah, so that's the rambling path of how we end up with Jeremy Workman. He was the first person to get the hard drives. That mean all that footage had sat on a hard drive for close to 20 years. I'll show you on the Zoom here. See that pile right there?
Yeah.
Those are just hard drives.
Oh my, of the footage?
That's just all the art. That's all art. There's like 52 terabytes of art documentation sitting over there. And so he was the first person to be given access to some of that pile and be like, here's the hard drive, and you tell us if we have enough footage to anchor a film. And sure enough, he very pleased with what we had shot over the
I'm sure
years.
he was.
Yeah.
Tanea, you wanted to ask something about like the class structure and tying that in?
I just knew that you had a lot of leadership skills with your students and the tape art. And I also saw your leadership skills with your friends. You were the kind of the pivotal point of it all. What was transferable in both of those? Kind of like what skills did you teach your students that you try to teach your friends in order to make it so successful for 4 years? Because you did that for 4 years. That is a long time.
That's a wow, that's a super interesting question. I think at the heart of it, what you witness in the movies, okay, so you've got these eight people who seem to be really kind of bound to each other. And to describe how we get to that spot, we've got a couple of things happening. I met at least half of that team as a teacher, but it's sort of like as an older peer. Like I'm forever bound to students who make like really awesome artwork, where I get to sort of be part of their growth and development. More importantly, though, in the 2 years leading up to the Secret Mall apartment, we as a group were working on a September 11th memorial. And so, what that meant was that we had made the decision that we were going to go into Manhattan and we drew a map of Manhattan from the World Trade Center up to 125th, where there were seven hearts. The hearts are about 7 miles worth of walking. And on that heart path, we were going to draw, one block at a time, a simple silhouette of every fireman and every airline passenger that died at the World Trade Center. So that decision was an idea about creating a large sort of rogue memorial. But the act of doing it is to illegally draw on 500 buildings. Because you're from New York, you know there is zero chance you're going to get even permission for like 25 buildings, let alone 500. So we, in the wake of the September 11th tragedy, where we were on the streets within like a couple of weeks making those drawings. And so that team of artists were in a space where we had to trust each other immensely and constantly in a space where we were accepting the possibility of any consequence that was coming our way. Because store owners, the police, security officers, as you know, can be very finicky about their space. So for 2 years, we are making these trips to New York City, we're drawing on these buildings, and we're documenting that process. So we are basically doing push-ups for the Secret Mall apartment. We're getting very used to documenting our art crimes and being bound to each other with a level of trust that is, there's very rare you have circumstances where you get to test that all the time. So by the time we're doing Secret Mall apartment, we are like, if when we say to each other, this is a secret, don't tell anybody, don't bring anyone here. That's why those four people, those 4 years, those eight people kept that secret. So I think, so to answer to sort of round, it's a roundabout question, it's a way of answering your question. It's like a perpetual trust fall for several years before the Secret Mall apartment.
I love that. That, yeah, because that you're wondering that while you're watching it, like how, like where the bond. So you provided some context into that.
And the spaces that we were occupying sort of like offsite. So like outside of the Secret Mall apartment, we had a studio. So my home was destroyed. Some of us had lost our studio spaces and our homes, and our next space that we moved to was this old horse barn from the 1860s that happened to be in this industrial neighborhood. And so I will share with you that I did a 15-year stint without heat in New England. And some of us shared those spaces. So that's another thing that's bonding us together is like we're putting our money where we think the priority is, which is making the art. So we are living in these like low rent spaces and buildings with no air conditioning, no heat. And that is another element of being bonded together because you're sharing a discomfort.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That
I
makes a
mean,
difference.
no, it is, but in an artistic way. And you know, and art is at the root of the film and the conversations, even in the film, your own girlfriend and family member, they're like, I don't really know if this is art. And then I like the one lady who was like, It's a mix of installation art and I was like, yeah, because that's what I got from it. It was like installation art. But what do you think a film like this does for the art community at a time when, art that seemed divisive is
Yeah.
under attack?
I think the sequence you just pointed to is one of the most critical parts of the whole movie. So at the very end of the movie, there's this sort of like super montage of different voices answering the question, like, is this art? Where the focus mostly on the secret mall apartment. I appreciate that section so much because it starts with our friend from the Met, a curator, who's like, from the highest echelons of art, being like, you know what? No, I think this is probably art. And as we get closer to me, and as the people get closer to me, the last voices are my girlfriend and my brother. So, and they're the ones who are like, I don't know. I don't know if we can go there. And the reason I like that sequence is because anyone viewing this movie has an opportunity to sort of be heard or be seen in regards to their perspective on art. That is a pretty wide range of acceptance. And I really appreciate the people closest to me are the ones who offer people the out, where they're like, well, I don't know about this secret mall thing. Within the movie, there are enough things I think that most people would identify and appreciate as art proper, sculpture stuff, drawing stuff. They're like, yeah, that I get. In regards to your question, when you refer to like the idea of art as divisive, what examples do you have in your mind? Because
Well, the government, kind of going on certain exhibits if they portray a certain message, and it's still
Oh,
art,
sure.
but if
Oh, yeah.
it's giving a certain message, then
Yep.
it is deemed divisive. And that's the exact quote.
Yes. This is, this is a, as we currently stand, is a more divisive time, and art is absolutely a wedge that is used sort of indiscriminately sometimes by people for whom they need not wield it. They're not the ones who are, it's getting, how do we say, hijacked in inappropriate ways and used to sort of divide people. And even some of the best, the most loving of art that is like deemed to bring people together, is being like used as a way to try to split people apart. I protest. That's not cool at all, I think. So, some of the feedback I've heard in the last year or so, I've done close to 100 Q&As. That means the movie is shown, and then I show up right after the movie finishes in an audience full of people, and we have conversations. And what I started to see at our local mall, this movie showed at our local mall, like where the crime was
I
committed.
was going to say the mall.
That's
The
so
mall.
interesting. That's
It's
so
so good. So
interesting.
last March, it started its commercial run. Right here, I'm pointing this way because if I lean forward, I'm just looking at the mall.
Oh
Like
my God. You still live walking distance from the
I'm in a mill
mall?
building. I see out that
Oh
window right
my
there? That
goodness.
is the mall
Wow.
right there. So
Wow.
I'm in the neighborhood. This movie opened at the mall last March. They were forced to deal with the fact that they had banned me for 17 years. I was officially unbanned. And so thus began a 32-week run at the mall. So this movie showed for 32 weeks in a row. That's like is a record breaker for them for showing movies here. And so I got to experience the full like fabric of Providence as a community coming out to see this film because everyone had heard about it. That's the thing that was most enamoring to me was that it just seemed to bring in absolutely everybody. To your point, though, near the end of that 32-week run, I started to see a lot of kids under 10. So their parents were bringing their kids to show them this movie because they thought it illustrated good ideas about protest and protest art and activism. And the idea that when you're frustrated and you have no way to solve the problem, that there are still ways to express yourself and to try to come to some sort of resolve and peace with yourself. And they thought that there were some like lessons to be learned from this film in particular. Fascinating.
Love
Yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I
I love
love
it
it.
too.
That's what I love about art. Like
Yeah.
literally the message that you can send while captivating a mind. And it, you can do that through installation art, performance art.
And the artist is almost always processing something for themselves. There's always a personal side in there. Like in its best, they're processing in a way that other people can feel through the product something that they can learn from also, that they can grow from. But at its heart, the artist is sort of like trying to find solutions
Yeah.
for their own sort of quandaries or emotional quagmires that they're in.
Like a
Well,
museum, like when you're at a
yeah.
museum. Another aspect of the film, a conversation you guys have that, you know, we wanted to know, why was it important for you to talk about how white privilege played a role in how you were able to, you know, get away with what you were doing for 4 years?
That cut was interesting. The first time I had done my interviews and everyone else did their interviews, and when I saw the first cut of it, I was like, wait a second, did everybody talk about this? So individually, and Jeremy, the director, said, yeah, you all of you without being prompted all mentioned it. I was like, what? He's like, you didn't ask me directly, you didn't ask anybody directly. We were just all in the course of a several hours interview. Acknowledged it, he saw that and just made a cut of it. So, without doubt, we're aware, especially as public artists. So we do work on the street. I'm in tons of different cities, tons of different demographic scenarios, and I am absolutely aware that I have sort of like a little bit of an invisibility cloak when I'm in those spaces. And I've had, because we are technically graffiti artists, like we draw on buildings and we are using tape, so it is temporary. But to someone who's just casually driving by, they may not know that. So I've in the movie mentioned that I'm very comfortable talking to the police because I've had the police called on me so many times and they show up and they're met with something that they perceive to be very harmless immediately. And part of that starts with just sort of my demeanor as sort of a happy-go-lucky kind of friendly kind of like what's going on attitude. And they can sort of perceive that what we're doing is temporary. And so we're able to sort of like bind all those things together to sort of like have an easier ride. But we are very aware that that initial approach would be different if we were darker.
Yeah. I love how when you did.
Hostility is coming our way, and we avoid that initial first contact of hostility most of the time.
Yeah.
Nice.
I love how when you did get caught, your first thing was surprise.
Yeah, no, that's
Happy birthday.
actually
I was like, oh, that's a good idea. Like, this is for
that's
you.
actually true. Like the first when they open the door, the initial then yeah. When they opened the door and they stepped in, they saw me. Those were the first words out of my mouth. I was like, the gig is up. Like, we knew we were going to get caught for 4 years in a row. We lived in a state of perpetual paranoia. And we did our best to not squander our time there, to not, waste the resources we had. But the reason it lasted for so long is because we weren't in a hurry. We had no deadline, we had no audience. No one was ever going to see it. So we, partly because of our work in New York City, had gotten really good at knowing when to strike and when not to strike.
And speaking of building that apartment, you carried a lot of things up that stairs, Michael. I was like, first, how is your back? Because from the cinder blocks to that couch and watching you guys just tape, like building this home, how is your back? And also, I love the quote when you said, you believe that a couch makes anywhere a home. Do you still believe that?
I still believe that. Yeah, that's still the first piece of furniture you move in for sure. This is the one that invites it's the communal piece. It's like it's the piece of furniture that invites other people to be with you. And then tactically speaking, it can be communal, and then when everyone's gone, you can sleep on it. So it's like it's a perfect little it's still my first piece. I think all that moving, all that heavy stuff is an insight into the fact that artists, I'm going to say this is a generalization, but most of the artists I know are crazy strong. Even if they're like these little wiry bastards, like they are so strong because in a lot of cases for artists, their body is their tool. Like that's their main art making machine. That means they're standing all the time. That means they're under pressure all the time. Like they're so I think that this the movie sort of captures that. If you have eight people who are just seamlessly moving cinder blocks up large ladders without any problem. I moved one recently and I was like, wow, this is no joke. So
You have the strength of Hercules.
Okay. Now you mentioned in this conversation that you lived somewhere without heat for 15 years. Now we see that you lived in a secret mall apartment. How have these experiences shaped your view on living standards, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean this is a woof, I could cheer your ear off about this all day. So my attitudes are shaped on the first of all, the fight for Eagle Square. So what that means is that in the movie it says, hey, these developers have come to our neighborhood. Their intention is to knock down every single mill building to build a strip mall. So for 2 years, I did the hard work, which is I went to every city hall meeting. I went to every single developers meeting. I did behind closed door meetings. I did all of the excruciatingly boring stuff. And that helped me be part of saving most of the mill buildings they wanted to demolish. The only one that got demolished was the one I lived in. So to make a parking lot for the ones that we saved. Boo. The ones that we saved were not part of the developer's plan. So all of a sudden they've got these beautiful 4 to 5 story mill buildings. They're like, what are we going to do with these? We didn't plan for these. So they turned them into condos. Those condos became the most successful part of their project. So, through our hard work and advocacy, we handed developers the best part of their project. They made the most money off of our hard work. Double boo. That led to a gentrification firestorm in my neighborhood. So I still live across the street from where Fort Thunder was. Like I got evicted 5 times in the same neighborhood. All mill buildings, dun, 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 just being chased out by developers as they came in. So my entire neighborhood now is condos, all in mill buildings. In the same building where I paid $150 a month to live, you can now buy that space for somewhere between $700,000 and $800,000. And this is in under 20 years that this happened.
That's how it goes.
So to answer your question, we went from being in spaces that were run effectively by slum landlords to provided a engine for art making that through the eyes of most people see Fort Thunder footage, they're going to be like, ew, what is this dirty, crowded space? But that space is the space from which art was made. All the things that we desire and crave, like the reason we turn on the Netflix is to try to find stories and narratives and things that move us. The reason we go to a museum, the TVs, the apps we're looking like all every dis the clothing we wear, like all these decisions are aesthetic decisions. Like we crave those things and we need artists to do them. And those spaces had those artists making those, and now they're just apartments. That are owned by a demographic of people that are slowly pushing us out. There's only like four or five, no, I'm sorry, 10 artists living in that neighborhood. That's it. They're all gone. There used to be 400. Now we have 10. It's so stand My standard of living is still focused very much on I'm not ashamed to admit, like I would still live in a cardboard box if I could just make art all day. That's, I'm happy as long as I have access to the time and resources to make art. Period. That said, I live with someone.
That's beautiful.
I live with someone and I have done the most I can to make it as nice as possible.
And my final question for you is, this is such a big feat and success. Do you celebrate your Malversary with your friends? Do you guys have like dinner every year and kind of celebrate when you guys started or when they caught you? Do you guys,
Oh
I know you
my
guys have the
God.
key, but like, do you do anything else to celebrate? Like, we were able to get
Oh.
over for 4 years, whether the start or the end of it. Because
That
you should
is
if you don't, you should.
such a good idea. No, we do not. The first time that we sort of all came back together was in the movie. All eight of us have still not been in the same space since the we all sort of parted ways in 2006, 2007. We're all still friends, which is very nice. So we have semi-regular communication between all of us. When the movie was going to be made with Jeremy, that was my number one prerequisite. I was like, I will not participate unless the other seven artists say yes. If even one holds out, I'm out. I'm done. I'm not going to do it. I was like, these four, I know are going to say yes. These three, good luck getting them on board. That's what we learned about documentary filmmakers. They're very good at getting people to say yes. So no anniversaries.
You should think about it. It's a beautiful
You think
idea.
about it.
Big idea. Sinead, you could plan it for them.
I will plan the brunch. I'll find somewhere close and I'll give you guys an invite and you guys all meet in person and celebrate.
Oh my gosh, that'd be lovely. The place I would like that to happen, then this is big dream stuff, is that the September 11th memorial that we worked on took us 5 years. The website, which was tens of thousands of hours of effort, existed for maybe 2 years, 3 years tops, before there was such upheaval in the way that websites were shown and people switched over to their phones that we had to take the site down. So all of that effort just disappeared. Next summer is the 25th anniversary, and it is my hope. I am hoping that during the course of the next couple of months, I will find some partner in New York City that can host us in a space where we can share 5 years of documentation, because we have an incredible portrait of New York City from 2001 to 2006. We have 500 locations with all these portraits of all these people who passed away. And if we can get that to happen, that's when I want that whole team to come together, because that's something to really celebrate, that we can finally share that work with a larger body of people. Because through this movie, people are seeing it for the first time.
Yeah.
And so almost every day, I get an email from someone who's like, hey, my brother-in-law died at the World Trade Center. My father was this fireman. Can you send us pictures of the work that you do for them? And so there's still sort of a
So there's
room.
another documentary.
No more. There's not another documentary. It's just there's sort of like unfinished business in regards to the
Yeah.
art that was made during that time period. And it is my hope that in the summer of 2000 and this year, 2026,
But we
somewhere
all
near
got to
two.
see it.
Yeah.
Yes. We have to see the art. How is the world going to see this art?
That's what I'm hoping we're going to figure out, is that there'll be some either gallery or museum space
Okay.
or nonprofit or the World Trade
I will
Center.
be in the
Center
city.
itself is like, come to us. I
Yeah.
have the hard drives.
Yes,
I have
you do.
all
You
the
showed
pictures.
us.
I got it. I got it. We just need walls and some support. And
All
then
right.
we can make something that I think people in New York would be really, really moved by to
Oh,
see.
absolutely. We're rooting for you on that.
Thank you. And that's when we will get together for dinner or
Yeah,
brunch.
the brunch.
If we can pull
Last
that off, we will get
last
together.
question.
Yes,
Only
yes,
last
yes.
question. At the end, it does say that the mall is struggling financially and considering putting residential spaces inside. Do you think you might have inspired that idea?
No, I don't think we inspired it. I think that is one of the great solutions that we've seen in other malls nationally, because malls are obviously in a big upheaval.
Yeah.
There are statistics, though, that in the United States, and the number is really high. I'm going to put the number low at 80%, but it's actually close to 90% of people live within an hour of a mall. So malls are still very much a part of people's lives, even if they're shutting down on a regular basis. This mall's unusual because it was one of the last super regional shopping malls made in the United States. 11 stories high, 1.3 million square feet. When the trend was towards lifestyle centers says, hey, We could put living and shopping together and make these sort of like faux towns that you can live in and shop in. And you, especially in like Texas and California, there are these little towns you drive through or near. You're like, oh, this is a cute town. And you're like, wait, that's a mall with a city hall and a post office and a gazebo and like a skating rink, but it's actually just a mall. In our own city, there's a mall called the Atrium. It is the first indoor shopping mall in the United States. We have the first mall right here. And they, in the last couple of years, turned them into micro apartments. So the first floor is still tiny shops, but the top floor are these adorable little apartments.
Wow. Yeah, I've
So,
been seeing some on like YouTube's and the
yeah.
layout. It is pretty cool, but it also, I mean, as long as people can't have access to just walk by your apartment, but the ones I saw, yeah, people were just kind of walking past, and that's a, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems a little close, right? We've been a
Yeah, I'm
little,
like, I don't know about all of that,
am I
but
on the
it is
phone? Am I for
cool and
sale?
even talks, you know, kind of goes back to the heart of this doc, which was like occupying unoccupied space. And
Yeah.
you know, we think about that a lot. And Tanae and I have both lived in LA where you see the homelessness and it makes you think like, well, is there space for them? We know there's space for them. And how can we utilize that space? But you know, we're not. So you tackled that. Great
Yeah.
documentary, really great for the art community.
Really inspiring. Thank you
It
for sharing.
is inspiring.
Yeah.
And it was so great talking to you. Like
Oh, thank you so much for
you're
your
just
time
so
and your great
passionate.
questions. Oh, so thoughtful. So
Of
thoughtful.
course. Can you share really quickly if you have any social media handles, anything else you want to
Oh, we
promote, so we
do.
can kind of post that and promote that for you?
Thank you so much.
Of
We
course.
just started using social media. I know it's not a
Okay.
big deal. For us, it's a big deal because as public artists, we always got our fix just talking to people.
Yeah.
But because of the movie, we are now Instagram people. So we are Instagram.com/tapeart. And if you go there, we are active. We are, and not just active, making actually like good content. Every time we post something, that's like an hour of work minimum. So we're doing our best to sort of like keep people engaged and sort of have a view into sort of our lives as artists and what we're
Yes.
doing and try to keep that inspiration going.
Yeah.
So
Because we're
check out
locked in now.
our
Everyone,
Instagram. Yeah, we're
everyone's
doing
like, okay, what are they doing? When's the next project? So.
Right. And we're doing our best to satiate that. So thank you for sharing it. We
Yes.
really deeply appreciate that because we're just starting to build an audience, and the larger it gets, the more easy psychologically it is for us to continue to make content. So
Absolutely.
thank you for helping us build that.
Well, thank you. We're rooting for Tape Art.
Thank you so
Watch
much.
Secret
All
Mall
right.
Apartment on Netflix. Keep it in
Excellent.
your
Get it back in
pocket.
the
Okay.
top 10, guys. Really
Okay.
good. It's really
Okay, we'll
good.
see you in the direct messages. All right.
Yes. Bye, Michael.
All
Have a good
right,
day.
bye.
Oh
Bye.
my gosh,
that was such a good conversation.
I want to go to Providence, Rhode Island now, and I never wanted to go.
Literally.
Now let's go.
And go hang out in his loft that overlooks
Yes.
the mall that he was
And
banned
go to the
from.
mall. He's not banned anymore. Not
Not anymore.
anymore. He can go. He unbanned. Shout out to y'all, because y'all know you need to unban that
He's just
man.
more proof of like why artists have to be protected.
And genuine artist, because he genuinely loves what he does. He loves the idea of art. He loves making art accessible to all communities, all people, all kids. And it really is a passion for him. When the girlfriend was like, he think it's funny when he has 41 cents in his account. I don't think it's funny, but he genuinely loves what he does. So shout out to you, Michael.
The
Thank
fact that
you.
he just could live in just crazy environments, because as long as he can do art, I'm like, you know what?
No heat. I
I
mean,
love that
literally.
because I love being a journalist and I love corresponding and hosting and doing interviews, but I'm not going to do that in a cold environment or with no lights and no heat. Okay. But that was such a great conversation, real lighthearted. So you already know we got to do a little negativity, some dragging. So we got to get into this piss poor performance.
ASMR.
ASMR. Okay, best friend, who has disappointed you this week?
All of my piss pours and yes are Grammy oriented. Shout out to all the interactions we had on our Instagram page. I
Oh,
watched it
you had
live.
your glass of wine.
I
Nino
was
was right there. I was like, oh, today
it
is
was so good. People were responding back. So thank you. Shout out to everybody who agreed, who disagreed. So my piss pour goes to Jelly Roll. And let me tell you why I'm pissing on you, Jelly Roll. It is 2026. Everybody is affected by what's going on in the world. You either for it or against it. So to say that you are this God-loving, fearing man, but you don't have any opinion about people being literally pulled out of the safety of their homes and abused, or whether you're for it, be for it. Be unpopular. If you're gonna be 10 toes down for Trump, be a sexy red and be 10 toes down for Trump, okay? Be a
Nicki
50 Cent.
Minaj.
Hello, if you're gonna do it, do it. But don't try to say, I don't have social media. I don't know what's going on. You don't need social media to know what's going on. Even everybody who almost 80 to 90% of those performers, ICE out, F ICE. We are not illegal. This is stolen land. Don't be this. Everybody had some sort of comment. And so for you to be like, I don't have social media. You don't need social media to see what's going on. And your wife is also a popular podcaster. She knows what's going on. She has social media. I think it's a
Wow.
choice.
I didn't know that.
Yes, his wife has this really, I don't want to say it is big, but not to us. Like
Right.
we don't listen to it, but she has a bigger platform as her own kind of like podcaster. She's been going through a lot of like infertility issues. They're trying to have a baby. And it's like to not speak anything.
Right.
And to just make, even Justin Bieber had his ICE out, him and Haley,
If that should have
everybody.
been something that he should have worked with his team, because you know that the topic can come up. And so you should have just formulated a better answer, because it sounds like a cop out. And there's no way that you don't know about it, right? Even like you said, that you're hearing all these people talk about it during the show, it's as simple like, well, what's going on with ICE?
He won his award towards the end of the show. There's no way. He couldn't have been like, I'm so sorry what's going on. I wish everybody could be treated fairly. He could have said
And he
something.
did say something along the lines of, I'm going to talk about how I feel. I got this project coming out. So if you're trying to go that route where I am an artist and I choose, because sometimes I'll be honest, I feel that way about the Beyoncés and the Jay-Zs, right? Because it's like, okay, you don't come out and publicly speak on these things, but they do do it in their own artistic way. And you have to respect that. Because again, they're choosing not to just have their platform and sit on it. They at least use it to shed light on things in their own way. So if you're going that route, go that route. But again, to just kind of, it sounds like a cop out. So,
Yeah, I'm pissing on him because he said, I don't have social media. That you don't need social media to understand. So piss, piss on your tattooed head. Who are you pissing on?
I am pissing on it. It's kind of around the Grammys, but it wasn't the Grammys, but it was Grammy weekend. There was a Music Cares event honoring Mariah Carey, and Mariah Carey has made it very, very clear how she feels about people doing her songs and having to watch her songs. The last tribute, she shaded Money Long, and Money Long shaded her back. My thing is, if you know, one, this is Mariah Carey talking about. She has a very distinct vocal range. And she's also very particular about watching, not only hearing people do her songs, but having to watch them.
Because she's going to show you what she feels. She's
So
not
if
going to fake
you
it.
knew that you didn't have the right group to give her a proper tribute, y'all should have changed who was getting honored, in my opinion, because they really played up in Mariah Carey's face with that tribute. I'm sorry, Billy Porter.
Looking like Whitney Houston.
Not in the latter end of the career. Okay,
You need
Billy
to let go of
Porter,
that weave. Let it go, Billy. Let
let
it
it go.
go.
Jennifer Hudson, they didn't even give her the right song to sing for Mariah Carey. They gave her, what was she singing? Oh, she
Was it Vision of Love?
Vision of Love, because she whistled. When Mariah does the high note, she whistled. But someone was saying they could have had her sing Emotions, because Emotions, Mariah's voice is a little bit more, so that could have worked for her, but it didn't work. Kesha, and we not Bob the drag queen, honey. Like, we don't rock with you like that. I'm not gonna cry tears for you, Kesha. Okay, there was no reason you should be on that stage to honor Mariah Carey, it just across the board, it made absolute zero sense. It clearly was like a ball drop with like who they could get, because it's like, okay, you can't get Ariana Grande. You can't.
They couldn't get JoJo, Tori Kelly. JoJo,
Tori Kelly, like they're like people that could really sing. Like, and granted, because you had J-Hud up there, but you didn't give her the right song.
Even the girl group Flo, who I like, who can sing, they should have had a better song. That Dream Lover is not their song. They would have did better at Fantasy.
So
the song
you saw
selection.
Mariah's face the whole time. She was very underwhelmed, and she's just like,
you know that smile where you don't want to hurt their feelings.
And we know that smile from Mariah because she's very. I am Mariah, and Mariah is me. When we can't hide the expression on her face, she was not feeling it. And y'all,
as Brandy's was amazing. Brandy's tribute.
Oh, Brandy's tribute. Yes,
they had Coco Jones. They had Kehlani. They had Raven. Did you see her dance?
Raven, but I also think Brandy is easier to do.
Yes, she
Brandy,
doesn't have the
Mariah Carey, so like her vocal range. So it's like, if you didn't have it correctly, then
she
just
have
wait.
Did it.
Just wait. Because at the end of the day, they're going to come out. Ariana going to come out for Mariah, but you got to time it properly. So if it wasn't this year, just wait. Because this is Mariah Carey. Y'all need to stop playing in her face like she is not worthy of the right tribute. That tribute was across the board a shame. 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 So you get my piss poor. Okay, best friend.
Shame.
So now we'll actually get into who we're rooting for as part of our yes segment. Okay, best friend, who you got?
Okay, I'm just going to give three quick yeses for the Grammys. My first yes is to Miss Lauryn Hill. I can tell that she curated that whole D'Angelo slash Roberta Flack. They should have gave Angie Stone one song, but they only did D'Angelo and Roberta Flack. And I think because she had ties to both of them, if I think artistically, one of D'Angelo's, and it wasn't a single, but Nothing Even Matters, their song, still one of my favorite songs ever. And then she also covered Killing Me Softly with the Fugees. Yes. And so I think that she was the connection. But to your point, the singers they chose for that, Bilal, Lucky Day, they had Anthony Hamilton up there, they had Raphael Sadiq,
they did it right.
October London, they had Layla Hathaway and him do the duet. That was perfection. Second
Shaka
perfection.
Khan. Wasn't it Shaka Khan?
Yeah, Shaka Khan came. Shaka Khan.
Love. I love that.
Shaka Khan is funny because the AX in the interview, like, who are you excited to see? She said, myself.
Yeah.
Shaka Khan don't give a damn. She's over giving a damn. So she gets my first yes. Of course, Benito. I love Bad Bunny. He can do no wrong. I can't wait till Sunday. I don't know what he's saying, but I can't wait to go to a Super Bowl party.
But he really got it. Let me tell you, because I went to Coachella when he performed, and I don't know.
No.
He captivated the whole, like, he got it.
And I know he was so grateful.
About to be lit. I know the people that's gonna be mad is gonna be mad, but they're gonna be over there watching Kid Rock.
Hello, and some other
ball
people we
the
never.
Ball, the bang boogie boogie.
Kid, nobody cares. So shout out to Benito. But my last yes, I have to give this out, and I really want to post this clip. Queen Latifah, who does your hair? I need to know who does Queen Latifah's hair. I've never seen a black queen in this industry for over 30 years who ain't never had a hair out of place. From Ladies First to UNITY, she's always had that perm, that straightener, and her girlfriend was a new producer on it. Ebony, she posted her. I know she gave it a hairdresser. Queen Latifah, your hair gets a yes. Just your hair. Never ugly, never, never not in place. So those are my three combined yes slash wins of the Grammys. Yep. Who are yours?
The only queen we acknowledge.
Yes.
Latifah.
Listen.
My yes is going to, it's real black, this show.
Blacker than black.
Okay, my yes is going to Mike Epps. Okay, his new comedy special on Netflix, Delusional, is so funny. I am a Mike Epps fan. If you ever ask me my top five comedians, I always say Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, Dave Chappelle, Cat Williams, and Mike Epps. Those are my top five. Very easy. They really actually make me laugh. I enjoy their stand-ups. So Mike Epps had the new one, and I was like, you know, I had a little moment to watch it, and I was cracking up. And Marley was like in her fussy stage of like falling asleep. So I just, you know, I'm getting more versed in the motherhood. So I ignore her when I'm like, girl, take your ass to sleep. And I'm out there cackling because he is just so silly. And what I love about this is they show the diversity of his audience, of his fan base. There's all types of people in there, but his comedy is still very rooted in just being black. Like he was like, and then at the end, oh, that's what I want to mention. It's so touching. He really shares his story of how he knew he had to get out of Indiana because he was gonna get killed. You know, like he was gonna, like people were hating on him as he was really trying to, and he was trying to get out of the street life and now pursue comedy. And, you know, people were hating, and so he just knew that he had to get out of there. And some lady that was from his hometown moved to Atlanta and was like letting him know, like, oh, come, you know, you could come stay with me, then you could come out here and make your comedy thing happen. She ends up getting married. And so by the time he's ready to come, she's like, oh, I got a husband. I don't think he'll be cool with that. And he's like, I'm coming anyway. He came, he talked to the husband. They let him live with them for a year.
Oh.
We're helping him. And he made it. He ended up meeting Icy. As he's telling the story, he starts crying. So it's
Ah.
just so touching, so beautiful, on top of the fact that it's just hilarious. Like the stories he tells, like he's like, y'all remember when I said 30, 20, 45, 55? He's like, I was high as a kite. I did so much cocaine. I'm like, yo,
I watched the interview where he was just talking about, oh yeah, I was high. I was high then too.
yes,
That's why
like,
he was so good at Sparkle when he played the evil boyfriend, because he's like, that was me before.
So love Mike Epps. You really see his growth in this comedy special as just Mike Epps, like his professional growth. And so it's like, he can do no wrong to me. And I love it. If you like good comedy, that good comedy, and it's Black History Month. So if you like comedy, and at least if you're trying to digest something about being black, watch Mike Epps. Watch his
I'm gonna definitely add that to my list
so
too.
funny.
He's so funny.
But yeah, guys, you already know it's We Watch Too Much TV. You can follow us on social media at We Watch Too Much TV. That's TEA with the letter V on all socials. Like and subscribe, rate and review, leave us a comment, please. We're really
And
trying
let us know what you want us to watch. I say that all the time. People give me hints, and I'm
Oh
like,
yeah,
I
and to the
will
person that
or
asked me to
no.
watch The Witcher.
Try. We will at
I
least.
did try,
Oh, and you
and
didn't
that's
like
my
it.
response. I'm gonna
And
try again.
see.
It's still in my thing there. When it's gonna
Yeah,
be a
to
day where I'm really
watch.
bored, and I'm like, okay, let me try to press play again and get to episode two.
Ooh, it's one of those. You can't even get
Yeah, and I'll say, because
to
if it's
go.
anything like Game of Thrones, I say to the Game of Thrones community, all y'all lied. It doesn't get good until season five. And you just got to watch off those four previous seasons of dialogue, murder, incest, dialogue, till you finally get to some goodness. And it's just like, it
I say
insists.
that about My Office. I always tell people the first episode, the first season, it was figuring it out. By season two, they got it.
So
But The
maybe The Witcher
Witcher.
picks up. I don't know. I'll get around to it. But as of right now, my first response to the person that asked me to watch it. But you guys can still tell us. We will check it out.
We will try. We might not like it, but we will try.
But on that note, let's end out with some positivity. What do you have, best friend?
We may encounter many defeats, but we must not be defeated. Maya Angelou.
Period.
Told you we are black, okay? If Taneya and Jocelyn are not black, you gotta know that we're black,
Okay. You don't
okay?
need to know our maiden last names, but they're
But
black.
they are black.
Okay.
I'll never forget that program in college
Yeah.
when they were trying to stereotype black last names and they said both of
Both of
our
our
last names.
names.
And we looked at each other like, really?
Okay, so my quote is, the black skin is not a badge of shame. I'm sorry, that's not my quote. It was the one under it. Okay, my quote is, I find in being black a thing of beauty, a joy, a strength, a secret cup of gladness by the late great Ozzie Davis. Ruby Dee's husband, the
Love
late great
him.
Ruby Dee, too. Love him.
I love, they've been posting a lot of their older pictures on Instagram lately. Love them.
They always the best, just so fly. And I love when people post color photos of Martin and Coretta. Oh, they
That's when AI is good. That's when technology is good.
dressing down.
Yes.
They put those looks together, put that thing on. All right, guys, that's all we got for this week, but we'll be back next week. We here. And our closing slogan is
It's going to be love, abundance, and dashikis because this is Black History Month. So,
love, abundance, and
abundance.
satin bonnets. Okay?
Yes. With a dashiki on top because.
With dashiki on top. Because I'm black, y'all. I'm
And
black,
I'm black, y'all.
y'all.
And
I'm
I'm
black and
blackity
black,
black,
and
but
I'm black,
black,
y'all.
y'all.
I'm blackity black, and I'm blackity black, and I'm blackity black, and I'm black, y'all.
I should go to work tomorrow and wear like a. As long as you keep your head to the sky. Somebody said that's the national black anthem. B-I-G.
Due
Hey.
to Jason Weaver. Oh. All right,
Right,
y'all.
y'all. Have a good night.
Bye.